broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
What I remember is Naomi Campbell.
The average death rate in the city during normal times is between 360.
So we didn't know that we needed a permit, but so that might be on our.
They're not
body.
Thinking about the students first, and that's the whole reason why we're here.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go through the looking glass and beyond to find said truth. And of course, our real purpose is to just have a couple of laughs, to try to get the film, to get the veneer, to get the oily sheen of the day off of us. All right, a JetBlue flight attendant goes ballistic. That's right. Plus, teachers in Milwaukee are fighting for Viagra coverage. Teachers in Milwaukee want insurance coverage for their Viagra. Dr. Ron Tartar and Art Griego join us this evening. 877-876-PHIL. Our affiliate spotlight this evening on Orlando's WEUS, 810 AM, and in the Tri-Cities, Washington area, KFLD, 870 AM. And happy to have those two great stations on the Phil Hendry Network. Our website is philhendryshow.com, where we have begun, as you know, our regular daily podcasts of this show you're listening to right now. We also have three times a week, or two times a week, depending, what we call our classic Phil podcast, which is a clip from our archives. This past week, we have featured Plane Go Boom. We have featured All You Can Eat Negro. And up on the site right now is probably the funniest of the three. Get in here and make me some bean dip with Vernon Dozier. It's fantastic. And then we have what we're trying to find a name for. These are the small kind of highlights of The Daily Show. And I don't know. I think we can call them, we'll figure it out. We can call them Daily Highlights of The Daily Show, maybe something like that. And it's a podcast. So head on over to iTunes or Bookmark or wherever the hell you get your stuff and go get it, baby. 877-876-PHIL. And in the news, we have quite a few things to cover. One of them, Keith Olbermann, dropped by Sunday Night Football on NBC. We have a JetBlue attendant that has gone ballistic on a flight to JFK. And this story, Stephen Hawking, the eminent scientist, has said, quote, abandon the Earth. Theoretical physicist Stephen Hawking has some advice for the people of Earth. It's time to get off, as in get off the Earth. He said, quote, I believe that the long-term future of the human race must be in space, Hawking said, to Think Big, a global forum that includes interviews with experts, was where he was and where he said what he said. Let's listen to a little bit of it. In an address to the Big Think Forum, Stephen Hawking says, to protect the future of our civilization, we should get the hell off of Dodge.
Our population and our use of the finite resources of planet Earth are growing exponentially, along with our technical ability to change the environment for good or ill. But our genetic code still carries the selfish and aggressive instincts that were of survival advantage in the past. It will be difficult enough to avoid disaster in the next 100 years, let alone the next 1,000 or 1,000,000. Our only chance of long-term survival is not to remain inward-looking on planet Earth, but to spread out into space.
All right, we have Dr. Ron Tarner joining us from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. And Dr. Tarner, always good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure to be on the program, Phil.
And what do you make of what you just heard Dr. Hawking say, and perhaps a few other scientists?
Well, Phil, I think, as I've mentioned on your program before, and maybe there are people listening this evening that don't quite recall me saying this. I think any time you talk about Stephen Hawking, Dr. Stephen Hawking, who is very well known, I think any time you mention him, you have to remember something. Our country is a great country because one of the reasons I think our country is a great country is because we treat everyone, we endeavor to treat everyone as a very special part of our world. We try to give dignity to everyone, and we try to install in everyone.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was asking about Dr. Hawking.
No. I, that's why I'm That's what I'm referring to.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Well, it's all right. But I think Dr. Hockey is a case in point of what I'm about to say, Phil, and I will address your larger point. We give dignity to everyone in our society. And in America, we give dignity to everyone in our society sometimes to a fault, because we want to make sure that person feels good about themselves, they feel valued, they feel that they are contributing. I think Dr. Stephen Hawking falls into that category. And why do I say that? Because I have, as a scientist over the years, looked at the same data that Stephen Hawking has looked at. I've written papers in the same categories that Stephen Hawking's written papers in. I've been published, but I haven't been published in the same journals. I haven't been asked my opinion on television shows, and I'm going to say something perhaps that some people may not find they may find this insensitive, Phil.
Dr. Tarner.
Hold on for just a minute. That I don't have the same attraction for women as Stephen Hawking had. Now, here's why I say what I say. Just because a man has unfortunately and tragically been struck down by Lou Gehrig's disease. And yes, when we see Stephen Hawking, we see a man who is a sad sight. One cannot even imagine living in a world that Stephen Hawking lives in. And yet, I don't see him suffering. I see him getting plenty of attention, quoted in all kinds of newspapers. It seems to me he has the interest of a new female almost monthly. And why is this? Because Stephen Hawking is in a motorized wheelchair.
I have to interrupt you because I want to ask a question.
Oh, go ahead.
Stephen Hawking, an eminent physicist, as we've said, a theoretical physicist, a man who is paid to theorize.
Well, you're not paid to just think up wild things, if you're paid at all. And Stephen Hawking is making a lot of money with his writing and his lecturing. You are.
But just to hear me out. Are you telling me that Stephen Hawking gets all of this attention because, well, you said it, because he's in a wheelchair?
I'm telling you that Stephen Hawking, were he not in a motorized, I didn't say a wheelchair, because I think that Hawking has upped the ante by having this wheelchair that he's in with all of the bells and whistles and the gizmos and the buttons and so forth. He ups the ante because we look at him almost as if we look at that character from Star Trek, that one captain who came back and he only had his head sitting on a unit. I don't know if you remember the
I think it was with Jeffrey Chandler, the actor.
I forget
the actor, but he was a Star Trek captain who wanted to go back to a planet where he could imagine himself.
Where he could restore himself, in his imagination. Stephen Hawking, were he not in this wheelchair with all of its bells and whistles, would be no better known and no better appreciated than Bill Nye the Science Guy or Mr. Wizard.
You can't really mean that, can you?
Listen to what you can't really mean that. We are far too forgiving in our society, Phil, of people who move about our society on something other than their own legs. And the reason why we do that is because, yes, we want to give them dignity.
We want to give everybody dignity. I don't mean to interrupt you. And our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Talking here with Dr. Ron Tarner.
Let me conclude with this thought.
No, just one thing. We want to give everybody dignity. But are you saying that we will believe something that someone is saying, that we will give import to something that somebody is saying, we will make something extra special, important, and we will pay attention to it, and we will say, oh, wow, that's really heavy that we have to get off the planet Earth because we don't want the guy to feel bad?
Well, in a matter of speech, I don't know what you mean by make the guy feel bad. I think it.
But in other words, we don't want Stephen Hawking to feel like no one cares about him, so we listen to him.
minutes in a matter of speaking.
We listen to Stephen Hawking because he's in a wheelchair.
In a matter of speaking, yes. No, I know scientists, I know researchers, I know college professors, I know some of the most eminent people in our country in education and the sciences who have published and have published, I think, very remarkable work. And I don't hear their names. I don't hear my name. And I'm not saying that I am the end-all, be-all myself, but I think of myself as Stephen Hawking, as a colleague.
Do you think that you are as intelligent?
Well, I don't look at it that way. I think that I am every bit as I'm every bit as adventurous and curious as Stephen Hawking. Why do we pay attention to Hawking? Why do we pay attention to a lot of these people? And if you give me, I know you have a commercial coming up.
Yes, we do.
You give me a commercial break, I'll think of other people who are who don't use their own legs, in a matter of speaking, and we think they're really special, and we don't realize what we're doing.
So we're giving overinflated value to people in wheelchairs.
That, in my opinion, most especially Stephen Hawking, who has women, he's got money. I've heard him tell some Polish jokes. Seriously.
This is what you were telling me. You feel he's racist?
I think he has a great deal of bigotry in him, yes.
All right, we're going to talk here with Ron Tarner about Stephen Hawking and other people who are disabled. Do we give them more credit than they are due? You said you were going to do what, Dr. Tarner?
Well, I want to think of a few people here off the air I don't mean to single out Dr. Hawking, but there are others who you and I have seen them in their, on their crutches and in their wheelchairs and laying on, being rolled around on a cot or on an iron, on a gurney, and, oh, let's go talk to so-and-so because he's so smart, because he's on an aluminum crutch. And I personally don't...
Well, you're starting to sound a little bitter.
No, I don't mean that. No, it's got nothing to do with bitterness. It's got nothing to do with bitterness. No, I am a seeker of truth.
Well, you're saying, because the guy's hobbling around on a crutch or a motorized wheelchair, and you also said that Hawking upped the ante by getting all the bells and whistles on his wheelchair. So it sounds to me what you're saying is these guys are playing us.
I think they're playing us.
And you don't feel you're bitter.
Why would I be bitter?
Well, you mentioned that you've published some things.
I feel I've been badly treated, yes, because Hawking went out and upgraded his wheelchair. Yes.
All right, 877, hold on for a minute. Dr. Ron Tarner with us, 877-876-PHIL. And we're starting the week out here talking about, talking about science and talking about one of the most eminent men in the world of science, Stephen Hawking. I'm sure you've seen Mr. Hawking or Professor Hawking. He's been afflicted with Lou Gehrig's disease, so he has the very limited, if any, use at all of his locomotion. He's in a wheelchair. He speaks through that device that you heard. But he still is an active man. He still is a man who thinks and writes and, as you heard there, lectures. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Ron Tarner joining us. And do we give more credibility? Do we pay attention more? Do we lend our ear more to people simply because they're disabled? That's what Ron Tarner is saying here. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Welcome to our program this evening, folks. Here from the El Pacifico, we have Dr. Ron Tarner with us. He's at Covendale, Colorado, where the Mountain Meadow Observatory is. And we're happy to have you with us, Dr. Tarner. We're talking here about Stephen Hawking and a larger issue you were pointing to, which is that people who are disabled in certain areas are given more credence, they're given more believability if I'm saying it.
Well, Phil, what I'm essentially saying is the following thing. It's easier to, and this is, this. I want people to hear this because I don't want people to feel that I appreciate science and people who are important to the sciences, and I don't want people to think that I don't appreciate Stephen Hawking as far as it goes. I know a little bit more about Dr. Hawking than most people. Hawking gets a lot of pity from people because he rolls around in that mechanical chair. Now, I know he upgraded it, and the reason why is the more bells and whistles and switches and lights, the more crippled you think he is.
And or disabled.
Disabled, forgive me. Max Cleland,
Hold on. Max Cleland is a veteran. He was wounded, and he had terribly so in Vietnam, and overcame those wounds.
Right, okay, well, okay, fine. Do you think that Max Cleland is worthy to be a representative of the...
I think Max Cleland is worthy as a man that gave so much for his country, as a man who gave to you and to me. I don't think Max Cleland... I would rather... I don't know what it is you're trying to say.
Well, I didn't know I was going to be censored.
What do you want to say about Max Cleland?
I think Max Cleland, I agree with you. Max Cleland gave the ultimate for his country and lost his limbs. And how does that make him a Phi Beta Kappa when it comes to going to Washington and sitting down and figuring out what a bill,
How does that... Anyone is qualified to be a representative of the American people if they are of the... If they meet the age requirement and if they get enough votes. It's as simple as that. That's the beauty. Nobody is asking for a job resume when you become a senator.
Well, maybe we should start, Phil, given the president that we have.
No, maybe we shouldn't start. Maybe the American people should just accept the results of elections and say, well, this is where it's at. This is the way it's going to go. I'll do what I can do. Maybe the American people ought to just recognize that instead of all this baloney.
Well, that shows, I think, you're on the opposite side of the argument. Look at Larry Flint. Larry Flint has gone from being a little man with dirty magazines, and now that he's in a wheelchair, suddenly he's standing in front of the Supreme Court? I can't believe it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here, talking this evening to Dr. Ron Turner about Stephen Hawking and others who are disabled. Are they suddenly, in our eyes, smarter, more proficient than we would ordinarily see them? Here is Lisa in Toronto tonight, listening on CFRB. Hi, Lisa, how you doing? It's Phil Hendry.
Hi there. I'm fine, thank you. I don't understand,
ma'am,
if Dr. Turner is saying that he's not bitter, how Stephen Hawking's love life plays into this argument. I thought it was a scientific argument. He mentioned earlier that he's getting a new girl every month. I'm uncertain as to what that has to do with anything.
Well, I'm sure that you recognize that Stephen Hawking, it has nothing to do with me being bitter, although I am a man. I don't understand how it is that Hawking, in a wheelchair, who he's drinking his dinner... How does... Maybe you could answer this. You're a woman. How does he get women? I've been living alone for over a year now.
But I'm not even certain that's referred to this conversation. Weren't we talking about whether or not his science was real?
Exactly. No, we're also talking about how celebrity warps our understanding of what intelligence and proficiency is.
All right.
Your argument. I mean,
yeah, Lisa, I wanted
about
to
less known journals and you know, less women, and you know, he's got a fancy wheelchair.
He does. Excuse me? I think I know what it is I'm saying.
And if he has science, I want to hear it. I'd love to learn about it. If his science is weak.
Okay, let's talk about his science. We have to leave the planet Earth. All of a sudden, Stephen Hawking decides that we need to leave the planet Earth. Now, you know that man has been on this planet as a upright walking hominid for 2 million years, and we know that our most ancient ancestors are somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 billion years old. Stephen Hawking, because there's a whole lot of lights and sounds coming off of a wheelchair he bought, now says we have to leave the Earth. Why?
Well, and I'm grateful to learn that. I don't pretend to understand much of this, but I'm just thinking that you're really drawing away from your argument by talking about his personal attributes. That's all.
It's a very good point, Lisa. Thank you. Thank you very much. 877-876-PHIL. We're with Dr. Ron Tarner. Is Stephen Hawking given more believability because he's in a wheelchair? We'll be back in the Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL.
What was that girl's? What was her number?
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk here with Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado, and we're talking about Stephen Hawking's most recent statements made to a conference called The Big Think, a global forum that was interviewing experts, and Dr. Hawking was one of them. Now, here is his comment, Dr. Tarner, and I'd like you to tell me what you think. You're saying basically that guys like Hawking.
It isn't just Hawking, Phil. I hasten to tell you that we seem to give a mantle, we give a patina of authority to anyone. Let's talk, and I don't know if I'm doing the right thing, but I have to say that if you look at Helen Keller, yes, born into such unfortunate circumstance where she did not have the ability to speak. She had no sight, she had no hearing, and yet everyone thought she was wonderful.
But Helen Keller overcame all of that and became a writer and a thinker, and her books were published.
Well, I don't know if she was such a great writer so much as we wanted her to be a great writer. I don't know. When you say she was a speaker...
She had someone interpreting for her.
Well, I don't know what it sounded like. I didn't hear Helen Keller, and I don't. There's been a lot of Helen Keller jokes, and you'd be interested to know that one of the prime people that makes Helen Keller jokes is Stephen Hawking, which I find to be cruel.
Stephen Hawking makes Helen Keller jokes.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. Now,
let me just read this to you, then we'll take a phone call. Hawking said. He said he has concerns about how humans are eating up finite resources, and his claimed man's genetic code carries selfish and aggressive instincts that have helped humanity survive in the past.
Oh, that is such! It is utter claptrap that he loves to parade for the young female co-eds that come to see him lecture. It is such. Pure pap. He knows it. His agent knows it. His publishers know it. Aggressive behavior. You know, we know there's gas house greening gas. We know all of that. I don't need a man that just got his chair back, from Radio Shack. Telling me these things.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let me get to a another phone call here. We have John in Greensboro, North Carolina. John, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
How you doing, Phil? I'd just like to say that
Dr.
Tarner, you're obviously an absolute moron. I mean, to say that the only reason Stephen Hawking is famous is because he's in a wheelchair. I mean, he's made so much science massively acceptable. Except, to the masses. He's realized, how black holes irradiate energy and can disappear. And the Star Trek character, his name is Christopher Pike. If you're going to be a nerd, do it decently. But, the caller earlier thought that you got off topic by mentioning the fact that, he was getting more women than you. I think was really kind of missed the point, because the real point is, I think, obviously, the only thing that you have to be upset about, that was the red herring there, that you're not getting any and you're sexually frustrated.
No, sir, that is not right, though, sir. That is, no, sir.
No,
sir.
I mean, like...
ask you something. Since when is Stephen Hawking's love life a point of interest in the magazine? And yet I read about it all the time. I read about it in newspapers. I didn't bring it up. The mass media brought it up.
clearly it's an oddity, but you think that's why he's famous? You think he's getting the women so they can be? Think not. I mean, that's just an absurd statement to say that that's why he's famous.
I don't understand
clearly,
what you're saying.
Clearly he's done amazing things. And, you know, I mean, it's pretty obvious anyone
I'm not saying that he didn't do amazing things.
Keep living. We do have to leave this planet. Whether or not we're going to do that is a whole
sir, thing. I don't deny that we have to leave the planet, but where are we doing? Are you saying to me that Stephen Hawking said something original when he said we have to leave the planet?
What I'm saying is, you said he was famous not because he was a genius. You said you wrote on the same topics, and you're not famous, and you're not getting the women.
Absolutely.
He's a genius, and you're an idiot. What are you a doctorate in? Are you like physical education doctor? Or are you a gym doctor?
I'm an astrophysicist, sir.
I'm going to go in a second. I could talk about black people. And, you know, it doesn't make me.
What are you talking about? No, I am talking about Stephen Hawking.
Okay.
Stephen Hawking hasn't said anything original, and you just admitted that Stephen Hawking saying that we have to leave the planet is not original, it's not particularly enlightening. I don't understand why we devote 3, 4, 5 pages of news copy to a man who, yes, went out and upgraded his wheelchair so that the more lights and the more noises coming from it, the more brilliant we think he is.
We're still interested in what Einstein said about, you know, interpersonal relations and things like that. We'd like to listen to geniuses talk about everyday things. And when he says something obvious and it comes from a genius, hopefully somebody pays attention. But I don't think anyone is paying attention to you anywhere.
Well, the question, of course, is why. And I'll tell you why. Because I don't have, I'm not a hunchback. Excuse me for...
Whoa. Let's not... I don't want to use words like that.
Well, the gentleman just put... He just said it. Why aren't they paying attention to me? Because America is being led literally off a precipice by people on
because
crutches.
He's a genius, and you're some dumb person who laughs the smart people on the radio. Phil, you sound very intelligent. I enjoy you.
No, I wanted to know something. Why do you think he's a genius? What does he say?
What do you mean? Because I already said that. I flew through the short version that he's the first one that proved that black holes irradiate energy and can disappear, and it changes the whole fundamental basis of the universe. Because that changes everything. Galaxies go around them. That means when black holes disappear, things go flying off. And I'm not trying to nerd out here. What I'm saying is, you're acting like he didn't say anything. Like he just sits there in his wheelchair and talks about, ooh, the environment's in trouble. And people go, oh, what a smart guy. He talked about genius things.
Exactly.
And then
that's exactly
when he
what
adds
he, that's
that
exactly.
he talked about the environment, then you say, oh, that's all he does.
When he said what he said, when he said about the black holes, he wasn't in the wheelchair yet. Okay?
What are you talking? He played sports until he was in the wheelchair, and then he got into physics.
He was what?
Wait a minute. What did you say?
He played sports until he got into the wheelchair, and then he started working on physics.
No, but he came up with the black hole theory when he was running around with both legs. It was only when he got into the wheelchair that he started saying a lot of hokum that everybody thought was genius.
That's ridiculous. That's absurd. Okay, I'll let you go. Listen. He got more famous after he got in the wheelchair because he started dedicating all of his time to nothing but the physics. Because, well, what else was he going to do? I mean, he can't even play
beer pong. I'm an intelligent guy. You just said I'm an intelligent guy and you like listening to me.
Excuse me?
Didn't you just say that you thought I was an intelligent guy and you like listening
to
me?
Okay, well, that's a stretch, but let's work on it, okay.
Oh, you know what? This guy, he's starting to piss me off.
Well, let's watch the language, okay? I think what the gentleman is saying is that Stephen Hawking, there are some very profound and important and irrefutable things that he's said and that he has thought on, that he has published on, and you can't deny them, and you can't say that they are deniable simply because he's in a wheelchair. John, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Abraham in Miami. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
Now, doctor, you see, I think you are right but extremely misguided. Because the way I see it, it's not an issue of genius. It's not an issue of his academic work because the vast majority of people don't understand that work. I think the fact that he has done something original is what's amazing. He's a celebrity who's a genius, a guy that nobody understands, who's in a wheelchair, who attracts all these women. And I think that's amazing, and I think that's what's bringing some of your bitterness.
Great. Well, I'm sure that would impress you. Thank you.
All right, thanks for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Maybe that guy was kidding.
No, he went, where'd you say he was calling from?
Miami.
No, he was right on. He's impressed by that. I will tell you, I have a Twitter, and one of the things that I have done, and it helps me relax, is I follow these hip-hop, or what you call, I don't know what they're called, rap groupies.
You follow what?
I follow hip-hop or rap groupies on Twitter, and one of them is a girl named Cat Stacks. And I mentioned to her Stephen Hawking, and I could not believe, and I still can't believe, that a 20-something young woman involved in the music business, a model, and as soon as I mentioned Stephen Hawking, and she's black. Well, that really...
Okay, so she's black, so what?
So she's black, so what are you...
In other words, she doesn't get it about physics?
Yeah, okay. The point,
you know, you were knocking Stephen Hawking for his Polish jokes.
I'm not making a joke. I'm saying it's very far removed from the world. And yet, as soon as I mentioned Stephen Hawking, she asked me if I knew him. If I knew him, like she wanted to meet him.
Well, you know what? You have come off here, Ron, tonight talking about Dr. Stephen Hawking in a manner that people have picked up on it. You sound petty. You sound bitter.
Are you telling me that I haven't brought up a valid point that we give people far more credit when we see them in a wheelchair or being walking around with an IV drip? That we don't give them more credit?
That we give them more credit? I don't understand.
Oh, for God.
In the case of Stephen Hawking, there is this sort of image of the poor genius sort of locked in this world of thought and theory because his body doesn't work anymore. I think there's probably something very, sadly romantic about that. But what do you mean walking around with an IV drip?
Anybody on an aluminum crutch, anybody and I'll say it again, when Hawking got that chair upgraded, that's all I want to say.
Well, when Hawking got the chair upgraded...
What I'm saying is, Stephen Hawking, that's one guy that called and said that Stephen Hawking came up with a theory of disappearing black holes. And that guy, by the way, that guy that called, he doesn't know. He's reading it out of that Wikipedia.
You mean Wikipedia?
Wikipedia. That to me, speaks volumes. You can say what you want about Stephen Hawking.
And plus the fact that you said that Stephen Hawking has a lot of girlfriends, okay? That young lady picked up on that.
That's what I wanted to talk to the young lady about. You notice she did pick up on it. And why is that? Because that's what she... I was talking to Stephen Hawking, and the first thing she starts thinking about is, I wonder if he's dating. That's what she...
That's what she was picking up on. She was mentioning the fact that you brought it up.
Well, but why did she call? Because that interested her. Stephen Hawking, I wonder if he's dating yet. Because I understand, if that other girl is not with her.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, with Ron Tarter, Stephen Hawking, and whether or not Stephen Hawking has all of this celebrity because he is, he's worthy of it. Or because he has a lot of celebrity because he's kind of cool and weird looking in a wheelchair and he's got a TV show and we feel sorry for and we give more credit to people who are in wheelchairs on crutches or, quote, walking around with an IV drip. 877-876-PHIL is our number here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. So, and he also brought up Helen Keller, that we wouldn't have near the admiration for a Helen Keller if we actually stopped and thought about what it was she was doing, writing books and giving lectures when she couldn't talk, see, or hear. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's right. Read it and weep.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up, we have Art Griego, and Art is going to be talking to us about the flight attendant on JetBlue that got so upset he told somebody to F off, and he literally opened, I guess, one of the emergency exits and dropped that slide and grabbed himself a beer and slid down the slide. I mean, it sounds like the guy went crackers. We're going to talk with Art Griego about that next hour. Our number 877-876-PHIL. We have Dr. Ron Tarner with us from the Mountain Metal Observatory in Colorado. We're talking about Stephen Hawking addressing the Big Think Forum over the weekend, which was in Pennsylvania, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Did you know, Dr. Tarner?
No, I don't know. I don't follow Stephen Hawking, his every move.
No, I understand. I just thought perhaps it was on the radar.
No, I'm sure that there are some people in my field that follow him and like to be sycophants. I'm not one of them.
All right, well, we're talking here about Dr. Hawking, and you're saying that Dr. Hawking's celebrity is not anywhere near as merited as it should be, even though we had that one caller.
Well, that one gentleman who brought up the disappearing black holes, you know, the jury is out. If Hawking thought of that when he was playing baseball or football or whatever he was doing, if he thought about that, then that makes him no better than any other scientist that thinks up something while he's walking around and, you know, just walking to the post office. But when you are in a wheelchair and you're sipping your dinner, you're not eating it. You're not even drinking it. You're sipping it. And I say that to give you the picture. And now you have women, and I guess...
Well, when you bring up women, people are reacting and saying you're petty.
I'm not being petty, Phil. I have a rich social life. I don't understand how it is this guy's gotten published more than I have. There's a lot of stuff. And I can see the more I talk, the less your audience understands, because this is a field that they're not familiar with. Publishing in Science, and the fact that this man, Hawking, upgraded that wheelchair to a two-horse electric motor. That's two horsepower he's got on that wheelchair. That becomes a hazard. That becomes a danger to everyone around him. Does anyone care? No, they don't.
I didn't know that he had it upgraded to two horse. That's pretty fast.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, it is. Very fast.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to a caller here, Maddie in San Antonio, listening on KRPT. Hello, Maddie. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Maddie, you there? All right, Maddie's gone. Go to another call. Here is Don listening in Houston on KPRC. Don, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Great show, as usual.
Here is Gino in Sarasota. Gino, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hi. Yeah, basically, hi. I'm not really sure what Dr. Tarner's problem is. Quite honestly,
I don't have a problem.
A bit petty.
I don't have a problem.
Being a bit petty about things. I mean, about the horsepower on his wheelchair. I mean, seriously. Yes, doctor, there will come a day when we do have to leave this planet.
And so what's really the genius comment about? That's not a genius statement, though. And everyone thinks that's such a genius statement.
Well, no, I don't think that it's a genius statement. But you shooting holes in it kind of seems stupid to me. I mean, it's... You know, if you have any idea whatsoever about how nonlinear, you know, the cosmos is, and how much the universe doesn't really care what we want or how long we want to have it for, we will eventually have to leave this planet.
I know that.
An asteroid.
I know that. But what makes that headline news? I think the average school child knows that.
Well,
and yet when Stephen Hawking uses that mechanical voice of his and he says it, suddenly he's got women wanting to push his wheelchair around.
Okay.
Why?
I will agree with you that Stephen Hawking does tend to be one of the least respected physicists, even though he does hold Sir Isaac Newton's old job at Cambridge. He does tend not to carry much weight among his own community. They kind of diss him in some ways. I would say that some of them, it's probably because his handicap does draw a lot
of attention. That's what I've been talking about, yeah.
Okay, I will agree with you on that.
Right, right. So, sir, for 2 minutes now, I'm waiting for you to say something like that I don't know.
Okay. You're an idiot. You're kind of a petty idiot. I'm sorry. You know,
that's
not
an argument.
What I'm picking
that's
up
not,
here.
That's
and
not
I don't
an argument.
You know that. I don't think you
that's
actually
not an
know
argument.
That.
That is not an argument, though, about Stephen Hawking, okay,
well,
and the people's lives that he puts at risk with a 2-horsepower motor.
You making fun of his mechanical voice. You poking fun of his mechanical voice.
Why do you think he's going out and getting a mechanical voice with a French accent? Did you know that, Phil? Did you know that, Phil?
I beg your pardon?
He went out and got a mechanical voice with a French accent. Jack. Hold on for a minute.
He got a mechanical voice with a French accent.
Yes, to get women. Hold on. Hello, Stephen Hawking. And I would like you to, if you could zip me up. Did you hear that, Phil? Phil, did you hear the Hawking voice?
Phil Hendry.
Hey, Phil.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
They're not thinking about the students first. And that's the whole reason why we're here for the students.
When demons are riled up, they do whatever they got to do. Evil is busy. And
our population and our use of the finite resources.
Well, I didn't really want to be here, so I was made to be here. So
I watched the basketball game last night.
It's 2 inches long.
It's Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch. And every night we'll take you through the looking glass and beyond. And our website available to you as the adjunct, as the necessary necessity in listening to our program. You've got to have a backstage pass. You can watch our live streaming video every night so you can reference things. What are they talking about? Oh, let me go into the archives and check out that one bit they were just talking about. Oh, yes, here it is. In 2002, or you can go into the archives and say, oh, what was that video that Phil was talking about, the webcast he did back in 2005? Oh, what was that TV pilot? Or what was that appearance he did at the Aspen Comedy Festival? And you can go through the archives, and you have your backstage pass, and you have guaranteed email response from Phil, which, by the way, today we've upped that guarantee. If you send me hate mail, I can't say anything mean in return. I have to just say thank you very much, and thank you for, you know, beating the crap out of me. So you also have access to our news feed. Our merchandise store is motoring along very, very well. It should be open, I hope. I'm really hoping it's open before the end of the month. We have big plans for a 20th anniversary one-man show celebration that we're going to let you guys in on as well. So check us out on our website, philhendryshow.com, right here. Over 100 affiliates across the country. And we're actually in the markets like New York, Chicago, and L.A., and Boston, and D.C., and, you know, like really the big ones, which that's kind of a first, too. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Art Griego is at the Santa Monica Airport. Mr. Griego is a retired commercial pilot as well as a private pilot, ran a private shuttle service for a long time, and now is retired, but was a commercial pilot for some 25 years. The story here, Art, and by the way, thanks for joining us on such short notice.
You know, so you're the only guy in radio that I would do that for. And in fact, I was talking to my wife earlier, and I said that I was going on your program, and she said she wanted to turn it on. And I said that this is the only guy, and I've been contacted, Phil, by people whenever we've had an aviation incident, whenever we have something go here in Santa Monica or elsewhere. I generally get the call from one or two of these news agencies. You're the only guy I'll drop it all for, though, because you've been on your program for a long time. Really appreciate it.
Well, I thank you very much for saying that, Art. Thank you. Did you hear about this JetBlue incident?
Oh, yeah. Sure did.
All right. Let me read a little bit of this to the audience, because it's quite bizarre, and it's, in a way, amusing. A JetBlue flight attendant was arrested today following a bizarre incident on board a flight incoming to John F. Kennedy Airport in New York, in which he allegedly inflated the emergency exit slide and made it down to the tarmac after cursing out passengers over the plane's intercom. Channel 2 in New York, CBS's Hazel Sanchez got a look at the inflatable emergency slide on Monday afternoon. It was to be it was to be towed away after aviation sources said JetBlue flight attendant Steven Slater deployed it in a fit of rage just after the plane landed about noontime in New York. Sources said Slater got into a heated argument with a passenger aboard flight 1052 from Pittsburgh International Airport after the plane landed. Sources said Slater lost his temper when a passenger attempted to pull baggage out of an overhead bin as the plane taxied to the gate. Sources also said Slater told the passenger to sit down until the plane was parked at the gate, but the passenger yelled expletives at Slater and pulled the bag out, hitting the flight attendant in the head. Aviation sources said Slater got the plane's public address system and yelled, "This is 28 years, I've had it, that's it." He then, according to sources, grabbed some beer from the plane, deployed the inflatable slide, and took off in his car parked in an emergency at an employee lot. Aviation sources at JetBlue waited 25 minutes before notifying Post Authority police. A manhunt ensued. Police searched the terminals and the airport grounds. Slater was later arrested at the Bell Harbor, New York home he shares with his partner, according to Mr. Slater's mother. And in a statement released by JetBlue on Monday, the airline said it was, quote, working with the FAA and the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey to investigate the incident. Have you ever heard of anything, and you flew for 25, 30 years, have you ever heard of anything like that?
Well, you're going to be maybe surprised to hear this, but I have. Not to the extent that this man displayed his frustration, but I have. I want to point something out before we go any further, Phil, and that is, you mentioned that this was a CBS.
It was Channel 2 in New York that did the initial reporting, yeah.
All right. I think that in conjunction with the airline JetBlue, they made a point of saying that this man lived with his partner, which means that he's a homosexual. He lives with another man. And so Channel 2 in New York and JetBlue teamed up to make sure that you and I both know this man's a homosexual, so that they really can get the impetus. They get the momentum, you know, when it comes to the news on this, and they make this man look as if he's insane.
And you actually believe you get that?
Oh, I got, look, Phil. I when I flew commercially, and I watched what flight attendants and back in the day stewardesses had to deal with. You knew that it was going to be, obviously, it was a very tough job to do. I knew my job was tough. I knew that flying the actual aircraft was very, very difficult. So what must it be like for the individuals who are in the cabin dealing with passengers? Now, I love to fly, and I think most passengers are wonderful people, and if they can just stay in their seats and do as they're told, I think everybody can have a reasonably pleasant flight. But we have a lot of flight attendants who have been in the business because they wanted to get away from the normalcy of life. They wanted to get out
I don't mean to interrupt you. You said that you can have a reasonably good flight. Is it that stressful flying the aircraft? I can understand perhaps the flight attendant.
It's stressful for all of us, Phil. This doesn't surprise me. You asked me, have I seen this before? I've seen versions of it. I've seen flight attendants get hit with bags. I've seen flight attendants get hit with baby strollers that are coming down from the overhead bin. I've seen flight attendants getting hit with hangers, metal hangers. I have seen some people almost lose an eye working. So when we look at this story, what are we told? We're told that a homosexual got into a hissy fit and slid down the slide. That's the way JetBlue wants to make this man look.
And so we're not getting the whole story.
No, we are not getting the whole story. What's the name of the guy that almost took this man's eye out?
Well, I don't know that he almost took his eye out. What we have here is a story. It says that he hit him with a bag. He asked him to sit down. But let's just say that this guy did all of those things. This man who used the profane language, or used the obscene language, and let's say he did all of this.
All right.
This flight attendant's reaction, the emergency slide while the plane is still on the tarmac, and this has got to be borderline, if not all the way over the line, mentally disturbed, don't you think?
Well, mentally disturbed, it's a statement. If you call it mentally disturbed, that means he didn't know what he was doing. I think it's a statement. I don't know what happened. You don't know what happened.
I'm just reading the story.
But that's the same news service that wanted you to believe, that wants to make sure you know he's a homosexual living with another man.
And what has that got to do with it in your mind? What is that?
That means that they're trying to spin this story in their favor and against this flight attendant. So he's gay. He was on a slide. Okay. He ran off to his car. It all makes, I think it's terribly homophobic, the reporting, and I think JetBlue should be ashamed of themselves. And I think that it all amounts to them trying to make this man look as crazy as they possibly can make him look, when in point of fact, if he reacted the way he did, it's entirely understandable.
And you think that's entirely understandable for that man to deploy this, to open up the emergency door?
We have been coming to this for a long time, and this is not even the tip of the iceberg. The way flight attendants have been feeling, especially since 9/11, we've been headed in this direction for a very long time, and there is a, you could call it an urban legend, but it's not really. There's a thing called the Big RF, and that stands for Rat Blank, okay?
All right.
And the Big RF is going to be a flight attendant getting on that intercom and saying to passengers during a particularly turbulent flight, prepare to crash, and they won't mean it. They'll be kidding, but they'll do it maliciously because they have been pushed over the edge by an airline industry and passengers that have pushed them over the edge.
And well, what are that? See, you say that's the Big RF. Is that something that that flight attendants talk about?
Yes, absolutely, they do.
So this is. Are you saying that this is a favorite fantasy?
I'm telling you that of all of the flight attendants I've talked to and cabin crews I've talked to, the one Big RF that they want is to be in the middle of a very heavy turbulent flight, get on the intercom and say, "Prepare to crash," and just watch the faces.
And that will get them what satisfaction? Not to mention fired.
I don't know about getting fired.
You don't know about getting fired? If a group of flight attendants came on the intercom and said, "Prepare to crash," and they were kidding, that they would still hold on to their jobs?
When the company finally, and the news media, finally hears the whole story about how flight attendants have been treated, they will most probably say, "Good one," and they won't react.
Good one.
When they hear the whole story.
Good one that they came on the intercom.
And yeah. Because it's been rough. It's been bad. It's been real bad.
Well, I didn't have any idea. And I'll tell you something else. I don't know how bad it's been. I don't know how bad it's going to get for flight attendants and how they have to deal with passengers. But for a guy to get on the intercom, don't you think there would be flight attendants who consider that unprofessional?
I think there would be flight attendants who would say it's unprofessional because they want to put that kind of an image on their job situation right now. But after they hung up the phone or after they walked away from the news media among themselves, they'd say, "Good job, you know. I wish you would have done something stronger."
All right, 877-876-PHIL. You're going to take some phone calls, Art?
Sure, love to.
877-876-PHIL, talking to Art Griego about this JetBlue attendant that went ballistic at JFK and told the passenger to F off and ran off the jet and all kinds of stuff. He says that this is not surprising, and it's been coming to this for a long time. Flight attendants are ready to go ballistic all over the place, including the Big RF, which he says, in the middle of a very turbulent flight, getting on the intercom and telling everyone, "Prepare to crash," just to see the looks on their faces. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's right.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. With me is Art Griego. Art is a retired commercial pilot. We're talking about a JetBlue flight attendant that went ballistic after being told to F off by a passenger. He turned around, told a guy to F off, and then he took a beer and he slid down a slide and apparently just behaved very squirrely. And what we're doing here is we're looking a little bit into the mindset of this man. Now, Art, you're telling me that flight attendants have been under a lot of pressure for a long time, especially since 9/11.
You know, what is happening with this story is that this man has been portrayed as some crazy homosexual who ran off the plane. Even the picture that they've put, JetBlue released this picture. Anyone can see that this man has been treated very unfairly by JetBlue. I don't even know that what happened. I don't even know what they say happened. No one does, except for the people on the plane. I'd love to hear what they had to say. Flight attendants have been dealing with alcoholics for years. And generally, it turns into something that is not very pretty. Do you hear about it much? No, you don't. Because we try to keep the situation under control. But this was this man's one alcoholic too many.
Give me an example of what it is you say that flight attendants are up against. You know,
well, every flight is a potential disaster because, and I know that I'm getting myself into some deep water here. Every flight is a potential disaster because of the passengers.
A potential disaster? How?
I'm going to give you an example. We're preparing meals, and the flight attendants are preparing meals. The cabin crew is preparing meals. And they are giving themselves shoulder massages or whatever because it's been a very tense flight. Now, you have a passenger saying, excuse me, but you're out of toilet paper in the bathroom. I don't know about you, but at my house, being out of toilet paper in the bathroom, is that the biggest emergency? All you have to do is reach for a tissue, reach for a paper towel, and, you know, we'll deal with it later. But when you bother a flight attendant with something that you know has nothing to do with anything, you just want them to, you want to talk to them, you know?
Well, wait a minute. Hold on for a minute.
No, but you don't understand, Phil. Passengers get out of their seats and go up to the cabin because they want to talk to the flight attendant and pretend like, you know, they're part of the crew or something. I don't know why they do it. I had a woman when I was working I was actually in the jump seat on a turnaround, and so they had us work in the cabin, and this woman asked for a pillow, okay? I had just gotten my, sat down and gotten something to eat. Now she's telling me she wants a pillow. Now, I realize that I'm working the flight, but she knows I'm a captain because I'm wearing a captain's jacket, and she's tapping me on the shoulder for a pillow. And I turned around and I said to her, and it was, and I'm proud of this. I said, "Don't tap me again. Don't even touch me again."
You said that to a passenger.
Yes, I did. And that was like 4 years before this guy let the slide go. I said to this passenger, "Don't touch me again." So, and why did I say?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why did you say that, because that doesn't sound to me like a very...
No, it doesn't sound to you because you're not a professional. You don't understand how that endangers the flight. I'm sitting down to eat. I've already helped the crew. She's tapping me and wanting a pillow. That endangers every person on that flight.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We have John in Hagerstown, Pennsylvania, on the Phil Hendry Show, listening to us on WEEO. John, go ahead.
I just kind of wanted to comment that I think there are a lot of other jobs out there that are far more emotionally and mentally stressful as well as physically demanding than flight attendants. They're flight attendants. They're supposed to bring pillows and toilet paper to people. That's their job.
No, they're not.
They knew what their job was when they chose it, okay? They chose that profession. If they have such a sense of entitlement and such an attitude of, if I don't want to do anything, I just want to collect a paycheck, then perhaps they should lose their jobs before they do something stupid.
Well, tell me where where it says we're supposed to deal with alcoholics. I don't know. It didn't say that in my job description.
Well, you serve alcohol, right?
Who says we have to deal with alcoholics?
This man's making a good point. You have to deal with alcoholics. It's part of society. If you're a bartender and you're serving alcohol, you know you're going to have to deal with some people that are drinking alcohol, don't you?
Yeah, that can drink like men, not like little kids.
Every airline and everybody that serves alcohol reserves the right to stop service and to refuse service if there's a problem with the person drinking.
Let me ask you this. Since you know so much about my business, I'm sitting down to have a meal, my first meal in 12 hours, and this woman is bugging me, is tapping me, tap, 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 for a pillow. Now I say,
it's your job.
It's my job to help crash the plane.
How is that going to crash the plane?
It's your job to attend to people on that flight. You see, I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I oftentimes work 38-hour shifts, at only to turn around and sleep for 6 hours and work another 30 hours straight, all right?
I don't get to go home to my family at the end of the week. 877-877-877-877-877-877-6-PHIL. What happened to the guy?
We'll be right back.
This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. We're really talking about flight attendants, and we're talking about what it is that they deal with. And it was brought on really by a story that has more to do, I think, with what passengers have to deal with. And this is a flight attendant on JetBlue who, quote, went ballistic after someone bopped him on the head with a piece of baggage and was told to sit down. And this passenger told this guy to F off. So the guy said, "You are a stupid mother effer, and F you too." And he opened up an emergency exit and went down a rubber slide, and off he went. And Art Griego joins us. Art spent 25 years as a commercial pilot. And you've been talking about the stresses that people are under, but you have to admit that sounds like crazy behavior, right?
Well, again, I don't know what happened. You know, this is what news media is telling me. They made a point of saying this man is gay. They published a ridiculous picture of this man to make him look. I think it's the story is homophobic. To the nth degree, I don't think that people have any awareness of the stress that we're under, and I think it's time. I think it's time we let people know. You know, we talk about police and firefighters. We talk about soldiers. Nobody ever talks about flight attendants. And on 9/11, while the police and the firefighters and the soldiers were deploying and doing what they did, the flight attendants aboard those aircraft had to spend their last days, their last hours, their last minute on this planet with the very people that had spent so many years making our lives miserable. I think of the last minute I'm on this earth, and I've got to spend it with that woman. And I told you, I sat down to have dinner, and I want a pillow, 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 pillow with the finger. I told her, I said, that's the last time you ever touch me. I can tell you, Phil.
Maybe this isn't registering, you know.
What isn't registering? The flight attendants died on 9/11?
No, of course that's registering. And, I don't like using 9/11 for, you know, nowadays, boy, it's gotten to the point now where 9/11 becomes the trampoline for everybody just to kind of flop on so they get a little elevation, get a little moral high ground out of it, you know.
No, what are you talking about? I'm saying everybody deserves the accolades. I just think that it's tragic that a flight attendant, in her last breath that she draws on not on the Earth, but several hundred feet above it, she's breathing the same air that is being breathed by... I'll give you an example.
I think that's very unfair of you to say that. I think it's almost cruel, you know?
Let me give you an example, Phil. I don't think when it comes to police, when it comes to firefighters, as much as I admire them, there isn't any job in this world that requires more just hanging on for dear life, more white-knuckled, nervous energy than being a flight attendant. We had a lady I told you about
Charlene Sharon. You remember her?
No.
Well, I told you the story. She was sitting down to read a magazine, a five-hour flight, on her feet from Miami to New York, and a woman says, "Can I see the peanut basket again?" And, you know, Charlene said there was the only thing left to say, and she said something crude, and we backed her up because enough's enough. And
wait a minute. I didn't hear this story.
Well, she was the lady that asked her for the peanut, for the pretzel bag.
I didn't hear the story.
Okay. Charlene was coming up from Miami to New York. She sits down to read a magazine. The woman says, "Can I see that pretzel basket again?" That they have the basket, you know?
Yeah, they have the basket with the cookies.
Yeah, and all that stuff. And Charlene couldn't believe her ears. She's sitting there with a magazine, and this woman's looking at her, and she says, "Do you see what I have? I'm holding a magazine, and it has words in it. And those words I'm going to read." And the woman is staring at her like, "Can I have the pretzel bag?" Or peanuts, that was it. And so Charlene said, "If you want peanuts," and she said something crude.
What was it?
Well, it amounted to, "Yeah, you can have peanuts if you want to eat them out of my you-know-what."
And you backed her up?
What? Excuse me, Phil. Maybe you haven't been listening.
You backed this woman up?
Have you been listening to what I've been saying? The unbelievable working conditions for flight attendants.
The woman sat down to read a magazine. Another woman said, "Can I have the peanut bag?"
She said, "I want the pretzel bag." And Charlene doesn't know what she's talking about. She said, "Can I see the pretzel bag?" And Charlene said, "Here, the pretzel." She said, "No." She said, "You mean the peanut bag?" She says, "Yeah, I want peanuts." And that's when Charlene said, "Okay." And she turned around. She stood up and turned around and bent over. And she said, "You want to nibble them out of my blank, blank, blank."
And so just so I...
So you don't understand, and what your listeners don't understand, is the working conditions have gotten so bad for flight attendants that we're starting to take matters into our own hands. This guy slid down the slide. All right? I told that woman if she touched me again, it'd be the last time she touched anybody. Charlene telling that other lady to eat the peanuts out of the you-know-what. And so on and so forth. Why? Because we can't take it any longer.
All right, let me give a phone number out here. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Art Griego, who is a pilot, a commercial pilot, retired, about airline flight attendants, the pressure that they're under, the working conditions, how it is not a surprise that this man, Mr. Slater, I think is his name. His last name is Slater. What is his first name? Every time I hear the name Slater, I think of Jackie Slater, who was an offensive lineman for the L.A. Rams.
Well, this guy's the furthest thing from a big black man you've ever seen.
Now, I understand that, Art. I understand that. I'm just trying to get the man's first and last name, Stephen Slater. And he was in an altercation. Now, if you're telling me that flight attendants have life so bad that they are getting upset when someone asks them for peanuts...
No, they're not getting upset. You are doing what the press does. You're making it seem like it's not any issue. When she sat down with a magazine, 5 hours on her feet, Miami to New York. I didn't say New York to L.A., Miami to New York. Now, that's a particularly difficult flight. She sits down with a magazine that she'd been wanting to read. It was a handcraft or handicraft or one of these magazines. And a woman that had been looking her up and down and asking for things... And they've already made her a special meal, and she said, "Could I just see the bag of pretzels?" And Charlene says, "We don't have a bag of pretzels." She said, "Well, that basket thingy." And Charlene said, "You mean the snack basket?" She goes, "No, I want peanuts." That's when she saw her opening.
And well, what do you mean that's when she saw her opening?
Because the flight attendant was getting irritated with what the woman was asking.
So when the woman said, "No, I want peanuts."
Yeah, that's when she saw a good place to go ahead and go for it. And she said, "If you want to nibble them out of my you-know-what, they're free of charge." And if you find it amusing, because I don't.
Yes, I did find that last thing amusing.
Well, I didn't, and I told the flight. I told the union, and I told the airline. that I thought it was a highly appropriate thing for her to say. She was fired, and I don't know where she is now, but I heard she committed suicide. Now, do you want to laugh at it?
No, I don't.
Well, you don't. Well, a minute ago, you were laughing. She committed suicide, Phil. She killed herself.
No, I don't want to laugh.
Well, you were laughing a minute ago.
Well, you didn't tell me that this poor girl committed suicide.
I'm not talking about the flight attendant.
Who are you talking about?
The passenger.
Why did the passenger commit suicide?
Because she was filled with such guilt over what had happened that she killed herself. And I had told the airline that my flight attendants aren't backing down. If anyone blows their brains out of their head, it'll be the passenger for recognizing that they had upset my flight attendant to the point where she had to say, go ahead and nibble him out of my, you know.
I see.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Thanks a lot.
Oh, look, man, you're not going to have me.
Thank you very much, man.
What happened?
Don't worry about what happened. He'd been listening, and you would have known what happened. I was talking to Art Griego, and he got into a very bizarre series of comments about a flight attendant.
All I heard was eat the peanuts.
Shut up, man. 877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Before we get, I understand we have David Hall on the line, and I'm going to answer the call. But before we get David G. Hall, who is our vice president of syndication, has joined the conversation, and we brought Art Griego back. I'd like to ask my audience, because I happen to think it is crude, not only crude and vulgar, that goes without saying. I think it is insightful. I think it is unprofessional. I think if a passenger on an airline asks the flight attendant for peanuts, which we all like to eat on flights, and the flight attendant, because she's put out for whatever reason, says to that passenger, yeah, if you eat them out of my blank, 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 you know what I'm talking about here. Don't you think that is a crude thing to say? All right, David G. Hall is on the line.
Let me ask you something, Phil, because I just got off the phone.
And hold on. Is Art there?
I'm right here. I've been talking to Mr. Griego here for the last few minutes. Now, I want to ask you a question, and I'll ask your audience the same thing. Do you know why would I get a phone call from a representative from the National Association of Suicide Victim Families? I just got off the phone with this woman.
I'll tell you why.
Hold on. I just got off the phone with a woman that was screaming.
Don't blame her.
At the top of her lungs.
And I'll tell you why. Because Art was telling me the story of a flight attendant who was asked for more peanuts by this woman that you're talking about. And the flight attendant said, only if you eat them out of my blank, blank, blank. And this woman apparently got off the plane, went home, and killed herself. All right?
And rightfully so. Why is this a topic of contention?
What do you mean, rightfully so?
Because, according to Mr. Griego, she realized that she'd offended the flight attendant and was humiliated. And
offended the flight attendant? I just asked the question.
Now, well, that's the point that I want to get at here. We're talking about a woman that killed herself. You are still sticking up for the flight attendant. And I'm wondering why. I mean, you're not sticking up for the flight attendant. You are sticking up for the lady that killed herself. Okay? But you don't recognize that she offended the flight attendant.
Wait a minute. Say that again.
Let me say something here, Phil, because I know this industry. That woman that killed herself, and it was a tragic thing that she did that, but the National Association of Suicide Victim Families should understand that when you ask a flight attendant for peanuts or pretzels, you're wandering into a very explosive territory. And the reason is this. The reality of what a flight attendant does sometimes comes home to roost with them. Yes, they're there for safety. And yes, they're there for things that are very important. Okay, we understand this. But we also understand that when you say to a flight attendant, can I get a bag of peanuts, you've just reminded them how mundane and ridiculous their job can be. And now you've wandered into a danger territory.
Right. That's what that lady did. Now she goes home and kills herself because she recognized...
Wait a minute. Wait. Just hold on for a second here. This is my show. I do not and I will not recognize how understandable it is for a woman to go home and kill herself because she felt she was wrong asking for peanuts on an aircraft.
Bill, I'm asking you to control your temper. You're sitting there talking about this flight attendant that went ballistic. Bill, all we're saying to you is this, Bill. Just calm down, okay? You've had a tough day.
No, don't calm me down. Don't calm me down.
Well, what we want you to do...
No, don't calm me down. I'm telling you that nobody... has the right to speak to someone that way, especially when you're in the professional line of work that a flight attendant is in.
You don't recognize that the flight attendant, as Art said something. It was very benign. The lady said, "Could you have peanuts?" Yeah. She turned around, bent over, and said, "Eat them out of my you-know-what." Now, she could have said a lot of things.
Yeah, she could have said a lot of things, though, that are a lot worse.
And
what could she say that's worse than... That is the crudest, most vulgar thing. And you're telling me now this lady goes home and kills herself, a passenger, because she realizes she asked for something and it was wrong.
I just got off the phone with these sob sisters with the National Association of Suicide something or other, saying, blah, 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 blah. And I said to them, yes, I understand that. Then they're threatening a boycott. And I said, boycotting what? They said the Phil Henry Show. That's why I'm here.
Well, I'm telling you what I said and who I was standing up for. And I believe it's Art that you might want to be talking to, not me. Here is Andrea in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Andrea, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Art Griego and David G. Hall. Go ahead, please.
Yes, just believe that. You're dealing in customer service. There needs to be respect from both ends. If the customer on the airline is rude to the flight attendant, then the flight attendant needs to address it. And address it in a positive, nonviolent way.
Exactly.
Right, but if the job is too stressful for the flight attendant, whether they can't handle the job, or they're not getting enough sleep, then they need to reevaluate what exactly they're doing career wise.
This flight attendant was simply sitting and trying to read a magazine. She'd been on her feet, and the passenger says was very confused. They said, "Can I get the pretzel bag?" And she didn't know what she meant. But it was the snack basket. She finally goes, "I need some peanuts." And she said, "Look, why don't you eat them out of my you-know-what?" It was, to be lighthearted.
Lighthearted? Oh, now we're lighthearted.
Bill, would you allow the lady to talk?
To me, it sounded very argumentative.
Oh, no, it was, she bent over and said, "Eat them out of my..."
That sounds, Andrea, do you work in the airline business?
No, I'm a teacher.
Okay, doesn't that sound vulgar to you?
Yes, it does.
I don't think
it would. Yes, it does.
I beg your pardon?
If you want to do stand-up comedy, then it was right. Then I guess it would be appropriate. Ha ha he, adults only can take it as a joke. But when it's in the real world,
right.
No, it's not funny.
Well,
I mean, when I
does
have,
that mean?
When
but
I have,
but I don't understand.
Me.
So the lady went home and killed herself. So she knew she'd done something wrong.
The passenger hadn't done a thing wrong. She asked for peanuts.
Yeah,
right.
Peanuts. She asked for peanuts. Why? Why did she ask for peanuts?
Because she wanted peanuts.
Right.
We don't get what we want. We don't always get what we want. And sometimes you have to just accept the fact you don't get what you want right away. So when the flight attendant said to her, "You want peanuts? Here, nibble them out of my blank," the woman goes home and kills herself because she realizes, "I was wrong."
Oh, the hell she did. She sounds like she had a mental problem or something.
Oh, no, now she's got a mental problem.
Well,
the lady here, this
guy. Two, yeah. one of you had said...
You're a teacher, right?
I am. I am. One of you had said that, there's a sense of entitlement, and it's so true. And I see it with probably, my son's age. My son's 18. He'll be 19. And... they have the sense of entitlement. Like, they just expect things. And that comes from a society being raised where whatever they want, they get. And
right,
that's
exactly.
fine.
But I asked the lady, you're a teacher, ma'am. You're a teacher. You do parent-teacher conferences, correct? Ma'am?
Yes.
Yes, you do parent-teacher conferences. All right. So if a parent came into your class and they said, I'd like my son to have a better grade in this topic, and you said, you know, as a joke, you bent over and said, reach up here and get his better grade because, you know, you were tired, wouldn't you expect them to go with the joke?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't think she should.
No, not
Mr. Henry.
No,
Mr. Henry just told you what to say.
No, I didn't. That's a no-brainer. The teacher's sitting there with parents, reach up here and get the grade.
But he's saying it's a joke.
There's no such... Well, Andre, I'm sorry. I don't mean to put words in your mouth. Does that sound like joking material to you?
No, it does not. No, it does not. When you have a parent-teacher conference in the classroom with school, it's a professional atmosphere.
Yeah, right.
And it
is professional. And you simply say you want a better grade for your son, he's about as likely to get the better grade as, you know, you are of finding it up here. And you just point to your... I don't get it. You're pointing to your rear end.
No, not with teachers. You're not doing... Not with students and their parents, no.
I didn't say with students. Just with the parents.
He's about to get as likely a good a grade up here, pointing to her rear end. And you call that something that is...
Spit it out. What do you want to say?
Something that's mature.
I bet you Andrea could have come up with that word faster than you. Right, Andrea?
It's actually mature. And what it is, parents really, their children are going to get a better grade.
I think you've got to point to your rear end and say, here's where that good grade's coming from. Any takers? No? Okay, see ya. See you next year.
Phil Hendry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
No, well, I didn't really want to be here, so I was made to be here. So, obviously, I'm just like wanting to get this over with.
Our population and our use of the finite resources of planet Earth are growing exponentially.
They're not thinking about the students first. And that's the whole reason why we're here.
The average death rate in the city during normal times is between 360 to 380 people.
I am gay.
I'm not gay.
Nappy is racial.
Yes, sir, I understand.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. Where we'll go through the looking glass. Where we'll go through the... down through the rabbit hole and, you know, all kinds of places to find it, but most especially just to find a good time. Welcome back to the show here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and our online presence can be found at philhendryshow.com. This is where our website resides. This is where you get a backstage pass. You watch the live streaming video. You listen to the live streaming audio. You get all of the archives. You can access the iTunes podcast. You can just access the podcast, man. Every show is an automatic download there. We also have three times a week our classic Phil clip, which is free for our non-backstage pass people. I was going to say subscribers, but...
You're not a subscriber if you don't
subscribe.
Yeah.
And of course, we have smaller clips. We don't know what to call those yet. Those are there, too. So there's just a bunch of stuff there, and it's good stuff. It's Phil Hendry Show stuff. We've had so many people talking to us about, when are you going to get an iPhone app? Well, all right, we'll work on that. When are you going to get we've solved the iTunes and the download thing. We got that going on. We're loading in more and more months of years that we were missing, 2001, that's in the archives. We're making them downloadable, all right? So more and more of our archive material is now can be turned into a download. And we might make that available on our podcast as well at some point, full shows or full hours. But, you know, we're humping as fast as we can. But as I said in our pre-show, with the amount of material that we have, no other radio show deals with as much material as we do. So I think we're I think we're doing okay, you know.
Yeah, I think you talk about people complaining about it, man. I just have to sit and wait.
Well, I'm not asking people to sit and wait. Oh, speaking of not having to sit and wait, you know, this is the 20th year of the Phil Hendry Show. We're concluding our 20th year. 1990, August of 1990, we started at KVEN Radio in Ventura, and we began blowing people's brains apart back then. And we went from there to Atlanta, and from Atlanta we went to Minneapolis, and from Minneapolis we went to Miami, great days in Miami, and not so great days in Minneapolis, but hey, and then we came out to Los Angeles, and what a trip. And we've been here, and we've been national for like the last 10 years, something like that. So this month marks our 20th anniversary. What we're going to do is have a one-man show, and we're going to have that sort of coincide and dovetail with a party, and we're going to have a signing, and we're hopefully we'll have our merchandise up and running by then. But we'll give you more details on that as we get closer to it. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and the couple of stories that I – where is this stuff, man? I don't mean to be freaking out on you, man, but I was going to start off talking about what? I have no idea. And my producer ain't helping me either. What story were we going to talk about? I guess he's asleep. all right, tell you what we'll do. Why don't we just go with murder? I forgot. I had a story all picked out, and I completely forgot. Well, here's this one here, the large knickers on Granny. I don't know why that story is important, but, you know, this is really weird, man. What happened here?
I don't know. What do you say?
I don't know, but you know what? My producer is in Medford, Oregon or wherever, and people need to wake up a little bit and let me know what's going on. Large knickers, a.k.a. Why am I reading this stupid stuff? Get this. Oh, God. All of a sudden, I'm in a bad mood, man. All I wanted to know is what story are we going with, and I got to sit here for 10 seconds waiting for somebody to wake up to give it to me. All right. 10 psychiatric disorders. I got all of them. Number one, hysteria. I don't know why we're even doing this story. The top 10 most controversial psychiatric disorders.
Yeah, well, this might be interesting, because you're right. You may have all of them.
Number 10. A la David Letterman, hysteria. In the Victorian era, hysteria was a catch-all diagnosis for women in distress. The symptoms were vague, discontentment, weakness, outbursts of emotion, nerves, and the history. And the history. I can't even read this. I apologize, folks. I got into the hour feeling fantastic. All of a sudden, I go, oh, where's my story? I don't know where the story is. I don't know what people are telling me. Nobody's talking to me. Nobody's telling me anything. I can't read this garbage that was just sent me via IM because it's not written well. So we're just going to continue talking about stuff that isn't in the news. How about that, okay?
What's the matter?
There's nothing the matter.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're looking all pissed off now.
I'm not pissed off. I'm not pissed off at all. I'm not pissed off at all. I'm fine, okay? I'm just not going to do any news, all right? Just, we're going to forget about it. Just forget about it. There wasn't anything that happened today anyway, man. There was absolutely nothing that happened in the world today of any serious note. Nothing. How do I know? Because I've been reading this crap since it got sent to me this afternoon. There's nothing in it. Anyway. So what we want to do is have a 20th anniversary.
Well, you do like a whole promo?
That's what I'm going to do, bud. That's what I've decided to do. We'll just wrap up this segment with doing the promo. And then what we'll do is we'll get our heads out of our asses and we'll try this all over again in the next segment.
Yeah, but now you sound like you're all pissed off.
I just take it easy, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to have a 20th anniversary. We'll do a one-man show. We'll do some CD signings. We have all of our classic CDs, that is our CDs from, I hope we've got some of our Miami CDs, as a matter of fact, going all the way back to 1994. We'll do some signings there. And we'll do it in a place that's conducive for having a good time. And that's a part of our 20th anniversary celebration. So there's a lot of stuff that that we have going on, including getting our merchandise store up and running again, and so on and so forth. All right, we'll take a break. 877-876, World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the World Famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here now. 877-876-PHIL. It must have been a confluence of things. The story sucked, and I didn't have the title in time, and, you know.
Well, you know, don't yell at anybody. Figure it out.
Well, don't you yell at me.
Yeah, but he's right, man. You got to figure it out or not.
What am I supposed to figure out?
Well, what do you want to read?
I didn't know. That's why I was asking you guys, and you guys didn't say anything. You're staring at me with a bulkhead stare.
All right, read this here.
Stick it on the microphone like that? What is this?
About some guy on a rag.
Parents who... this is the one that I was looking for, man. Parents who smoke around kids are child abusers, according to a British doctor. All right. Parents who smoke around kids are child abusers. Parents who smoke in cars in front of small children are committing a form of child abuse, said some douchebag in Great Britain. He's a leading GP, they tell me. His name is Professor Steve Field. He's chairman of the Royal College of General Practitioners, whatever that is. And he's condemned society's attitude to food, alcohol, and cigarettes, and him. He condemns society's attitude toward him, Professor Stephen Field. Anyway, in a letter to the Observer newspaper, he said, parents who take more responsibility for their children's health and set a good example are far, far better and a cut above. And the editor said, all right, let's put that in the paper because this pain in the ass is just going to write again next week. Okay. He said irresponsible behavior led to high levels of disease and early death. He called on parents, mothers-to-be, the obese, smokers, and drinkers to turn into healthy role models for their children. Professor Field, who represents 42,000 GPs across the UK, added, I suppose the same people who smoke at home in front of their children... This is what he said. I suppose the same people also smoke at home in front of their children. Oh, okay. He called on parents, mothers-to-be, and the obese, smokers, and drinkers to turn into healthy role models for the kids. All right. I wanted to mention this story because I think that I am the poster child of bad lungs. I, honest to God, not anymore, because I gave up smoking at the end of December. But one of the things that I have not become, nor will I ever become, is a reformed smoker. I'm not going to be a pain in the ass to people that smoke. I'm not going to walk up to total strangers and tell them to put it out, risking death, risking getting a shiv in the ribs. Hey, you shouldn't. Yeah, I shouldn't what? I'm not going to wave my hand in front of my face like a rude, obnoxious bastard. That's not what I'm going to do. And I'm certainly not going to let my friends enjoy their tobacco. I'm not going to not let my friends enjoy their tobacco if they so choose. So if they're at my home and they want to smoke, I don't smoke inside the house. And that's the only place now where I prohibit smoking because I do want to keep the joint smelling fairly decent. You know, that way I'm not around it all the time, right? And people respect that. They go outside and smoke. I got very nice balconies. They can stand on the balcony and look at the ocean, whatever the hell they want to do. But people who smoke, friends of mine who smoke, I don't say to them, you know, why you do that? You know, I quit. You should quit because I quit. I don't think you should quit because I quit. I quit, but you don't have to quit. You quit when you want to quit. Now, I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley. The San Gabriel Valley is the northeastern valley from the city of Los Angeles. There's another valley called the Valley, some people call it, but it's called the San Fernando Valley. And that's kind of in the northwesterly section of the city of Los Angeles. If you look at Los Angeles, it had two mouse ears on it, like a Mickey Mouse hat. One, the right mouse ear would be the San Gabriel Valley, and the left mouse ear, sort of, would be the San Fernando Valley, both of which are smog pits. Smog pits. They are large collecting stations for smog, foul air, dirty air, all that stuff, right? Now, I grew up at a time when we didn't have the light to moderate. You know, we didn't have the air quality stuff that we have today. We didn't have cats that were judging the particles per square inch in your rear end or whatever.
Particles square inch your rear end.
Don't play it back to me, man. You know what I'm talking about. What we had was just the, you know, air pollution control district. The guy would say, today it's light to moderate eye irritation from smog. Well, light to moderate eye irritation from smog, I'm riding my bike home from school, and I can't breathe.
You had to ride up a hill and everything, too.
Yeah, I rode up a hill. I went to school at Holy Angels, and I had to ride all the way up Baldwin, which was right past Santa Anita Racetrack. I had to ride up Santa Anita. As a matter of fact, when I rode my bike up near Santa Anita, that was the time when Willie Shoemaker, I think, was riding... Oh, I forget. Anyway,
you were the ride up Santa Anita?
Yeah, my route home from Holy Angels right there, which, by the way, if you saw the movie Seabiscuit, you know, this is no big. This, I don't know if people...
No, go ahead, tell it.
Well, it's not in the movie. It's in the book, actually. But George Wolfe broke his leg, and they took him to a, quote, priest's residence across the street from Santa Anita. Well, that was the actual priest's residence for Holy Angel School, where I went to school. The school wasn't built until the 40s, but the Catholic Church was there. That was, you know, Seabiscuit was running all through the 30s. Anyway, so it be smoggy as hell, man. And
you just said black. You went it be.
Yeah, he made a mistake, man.
No, he's trying. You're trying to sound all hip hop and everything, so you can tweet with Game and Kate Stacks.
Will you shut up about Cat Stacks?
Yeah, no, I know that Cat Stacks was tweeted by Dr. Turner.
That's the guy that's tweeting Cat Stacks. Will you forget about her? Anyway, so it was a really, it was a smoggy, smoggy time, man. In the 60s, I'm riding my bike. So there I am, I'm sucking down that crap. In the summer, I'm breathing that rotten air. Then I started smoking when I was 14, just to make sure that everything was on its merry way. Not only was I breathing the smog of the L.A. Basin, never has a city sounded so unromantic when you say the L.A. Basin. You know, the L.A. Basin with all of the dirty water in it and dirty air. And so that's how my life proceeded. And so you're talking about breathing smoggy air, some of the most unhealthful in the history of this country, right here in Los Angeles. And then I started smoking when I was 14, right? Okay. I played sports. I swam. I ran track. I didn't go to a hospital until just this past 6 months. I had pneumonia. Now, what am I saying? I'm saying that I lived a relatively healthy life. In fact, I lived a damn healthy life for a guy that breathed all of that smog, smoked all those cigarettes, and I mean from 14 until I was 57, drank and partied and lived the life of the, you know, radio star, such as it was or is. And I didn't hit the hospital until this past December, and it had to do with, you know, H1N1 pneumonia, and I quit smoking, and that was that. That's what got me to quit smoking. I quit smoking cigarettes not because they showed me a whole bunch of pictures of rotten lungs. I quit smoking cigarettes not because, I wanted to live to be a ripe old age and enjoy the beautiful flowers and the this and that. No, I didn't quit smoking because of that. I didn't quit smoking because of, I felt bad. I loved smoking. Loved it. Loved it. No, I quit smoking because after I had pneumonia, the thought of smoking a cigarette was overwhelmed by the feeling I remember having not being able to breathe when I was in the hospital. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. There's this really, really strong feeling for smoking.
You're saying that you really like to smoke, but the feeling about how you couldn't breathe made it worser.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's this really strong feeling for smoking. But there's a stronger feeling for, boy, did that feel like crap when I was in the hospital with an oxygen mask on. And that has kept me from smoking cigarettes ever since then. And there are days when, man, I could use a smoke. Like today, for instance, this being a Monday, oh, baby. Would I ever have liked to have a cigarette? But every time I think about smoking that cigarette, I think about how my lungs felt. I think about how I couldn't get up and walk around without hacking my guts up. I think about not being able to breathe. I think about hearing that damn alarm going off, man, because the oxygen in my blood was below 90%. I think about going down. I think about being wheeled down that corridor, not having the strength to even walk to the X-ray place. They had to wheel me down there and help me get out of the wheelchair and stand in front of that X-ray machine. That's how weak I was. They had to help me stand up.
You didn't tell me about that, man. You were bad off.
Bad off? Yeah, I was bad off. And then they'd sit me in the wheelchair, and here's where I got my first taste of what it's like to sort of be the guy in a wheelchair in the hallway that they forgot about, because I was a guy in a wheelchair in a room that they forgot about, not for very long, because I made sure they didn't forget about me, but they sort of they parked me. And they'll do that. Okay, I'm all done with this guy, so I'll park him here in the place where you park people, because the guy that comes here for the people that are parked, he'll be here to take the people that are parked back to where they're supposed to go. So you get done with the whoever wheeled me down there, man, you know, and then the X-ray people do the thing. Then they take you and park you, and they don't tell you anything, man. It's just, you're parked. And I felt parked, and I remember thinking, aha, so this is how it feels. All those stories about being parked in the hallway of a hospital. Here I am, I'm parked. And so, hey. So I turned into, you know, Tony Soprano.
You start being a pain in the ass, that'll get people moving.
Well, I did. So I'd be like, hey, you, wheel me out. Well, where are you going? So it doesn't matter, just get me out of here. That's right, come on. Well, they'll be down and get you. No, you're a big, tall, strapping guy, man. Go ahead, push me back to the room. What room are you in? I'm in room something or other. Take me to the elevator. Get me the hell out of here, please. You know. And then when I finally got out of the hospital, I was in there for a week. And, brother, I easily could have stayed another week. That's how crappy I felt. But I wanted out of there so bad. Oh, God, I never wanted out of a place. And I, my hat's off to the greatest hospital in the world, St. John's in Oxnard, California. The best. And that all these cats knew me, man. These respiratory therapist guys?
Yeah.
They'd listen to my show. Some kid came in my room. He was studying in medical school to become a cardiologist. He listened to the show. And all these guys would stop by and say, hey, Phil, he used to listen to you here. They'd stop by. We'd sit and watch George Lopez together or something. And they go, all right, well, we got to go home now, Phil, because we're healthy and you're not and you have to stay here. Thanks a lot. Okay, bye. But parents who smoke around kids, that's up to you. That's up to you. But I will tell you this much. My parents smoked around me. I breathed the smog. I smoked the cigarettes. I liked the cigarettes. I quit. It took pneumonia, but I quit. Keith Olbermann gets booted by Sunday Night Football on NBC. Like you knew that was coming, didn't you? Coming up next, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Bill Hendry Show.
You know, I must be flipping my lid. I shouldn't even get involved in this crap.
Yeah, we do nostalgia and everything.
What do you mean nostalgia? Nostalgia?
Well, who cares about Partridge?
Yeah, I mean, you got to get bogged down in this, man. You got to move on.
I ain't getting bogged down in nothing, man. I just was wondering what was that stupid-ass show that Bobby Sherman was on. That's all.
Nobody ever heard of Bobby Sherman, man. You better move on, man.
You're getting bogged down.
Hey, will you knock it off with the bog down, okay? So I blew the first quarter hour of the show. Or not the show, this hour.
You gotta watch your language, too.
Yeah, Mr. Hall's been talking about it.
What do you mean, watch my language?
You blew the first quarter hour.
Will you guys shut up, man? I said I blew the first quarter hour, as in it wasn't the best quarter hour because I didn't have those stories stacked up. You guys should have helped me with that. All I'm asking, man, what was the name of that jackball show that clown did with Meredith Baxter? The Monkees?
Wasn't that it?
No, that wasn't it. I forget. Never mind. Screw it. I thought he was in one of them shows where they had a singing family. I guess I'm wrong. Because somebody was asking, who was Meredith Baxter? I said, she was part of my generation. She was an actress. She's doing these commercials now to help you have a regular bowel movement. I mean, it's sad, man. It's sad.
What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about cats that I used to see who were, you know, lively and young and, you know, they were rocking the world. And now they're doing, hey, would you like to have a healthier bowel movement? Hi, I'm Meredith Baxter. Remember when I was a piece of tail? Not anymore.
Yeah, well, anyway, she's I think she went labian.
Hey, bud, what did I tell you about that?
I'm kidding around.
Lesbian. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Let's take a look here at the big story of the weekend, or so you'd think. I think a lot of people are excited about this. I got kind of excited about it, although I feel bad. Although it was a no-brainer. It was a call that should have been made a long time ago, and it wasn't. And I made the call, as did a lot of people. A lot of cats that don't like Oberman's politics. See, Oberman's politics got nothing to do with this. This has to do with what is NBC trying to do when I want to watch football on the weekend and I got to look at Oberman doing the halftime show. He's doing the football reporting. So I got to look at that stupid, silly clown after I've been listening to his bullcrap all week. Fine, I don't listen to it, whatever. Now my beloved football, the game that I watch, that I enjoy, that millions of American men watch and enjoy, our beloved National Football League, and I got to look at this guy's face again? Why? What's the point? And then this guy he's sticking his politics in there. He's talking about Limbaugh and the Iraq War. So NBC, and this was NBC's doing. This is the network that once upon a time had shows like Seinfeld, had shows like Frasier, had shows like, I guess that's it. But
well, I had more than that.
Nah, I'm kidding. No, but this was a network at one time. In other words, what I'm trying to say, a network at one time that knew what it was doing. This is NBC, man. This was the network with Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen doing the football games. Huh? Huh? Don Crickey and Charlie Jones and all of them guys and John Brody. NBC, they used to do the AFC games. Then they did the AFL games before that. This was a great football network. And what happened? They got outbid by CBS for the AFC games. Okay, fine. It's a new era. It's a new time. I get it. CBS got outbid by Fox for the NFC games. I get it. It's a new era. It's a new time. Fox, quite frankly, has hit the ball out of the park covering the NFC. They have kicked ass. I don't think anybody knew that Fox would do this tremendous a job covering football. I mean, they've made CBS look, as it should look, like just this geriatric pit, like a place where old football announcers go to rot. But that left NBC out in the cold. So what did they do? Well, they somehow got a hold of this Sunday night game. Because I guess this is the money. I guess this Monday night football was so thoroughly destroyed by ABC. So thoroughly and completely ABC didn't understand what it had. ABC didn't understand the formula. Let me tell you what and I understand that America's tastes in terms of prime time became extremely varied, very enriched, all kinds of things to do, all kinds of things to see. Monday Night Football, however, had a particular formula, and that was very, very colorful commentators and a very, very, staid and steady and dependable play-by-play guy. That was Frank Gifford and then the other two guys. Okay. Now they hire this cat, Al Michaels. That was mistake number one, and that turned out to be the last mistake that they would ever make, because I think, and I will tell you this, he's the reason why that thing went under, because Al Michaels didn't understand his role as a play-by-play guy. Al Michaels thought he was a comedian. Al Michaels is what sunk Dennis Miller. Dennis Miller would have been fine if Al Michaels would have shut up. Oh, my God, did he ever shut up? Did Al Michaels ever shut up? Did you ever just call a play, Al? Did you ever just let Dennis Miller have one line, just one line, without trying to top him? Not one thing could Dennis Miller say on Monday Night Football that Al Michaels didn't have to come along and screw up, make less funny. All he that one moment in the Olympics in 1980, it doomed everything after that. When he said, "Do you believe in miracles?" Yes. And every television sports executive in the world said, "I gotta have him, I'll sleep with him, I'll go gay for him, how do we hire Al Michaels?" And they did. And from that day forward, Monday Night Football was doomed. But has anybody, has anyone anywhere taken a once proud sports division like NBC's and made it into the joke that this current regime at NBC has done to what was once a tremendous, tremendous network when it came to covering professional football? I mean, NBC put the American Football League on the map. They continued the excitement through the 70s of the AFC and through the 80s and the 90s, pretty much through the 90s. And like I mentioned, all the guys, you know, that they brought us, the play-by-play guys, it was just fantastic. It was great. Great games. Great games, great coverage. But they lost it. Now what do? They bring along Football Night in America, and as if they really want to just stick the hatchet right in the skull of what was once a proud tradition, they put Olbermann in there. It doesn't, forget about the fact that I don't like his politics. Let's talk about cats that do like his politics. Let's just say, all right, who's a guy whose politics I agree with for the most part? I don't know. I can't think of anybody, you know.
Yeah, that's just it. Let's say you pretend like you agreed with Olbermann.
All right. Even if I agreed with Olbermann, I would still be bothered by him bringing up political stuff. I wouldn't like it. I would be, like, let's say I agreed with him about Iraq.
All right.
And he said, oh, and Rush Limbaugh this and Rush Limbaugh that and the Iraq war. I'd cringe because I'd be saying, dude, wrong venue, man, because there's people here who want to relax. They want to watch the ball game. How could you be so stupid as to just talk football? Let's talk. This is a common denominator. This is a language we all understand. We can all, I may agree with Keith Olbermann on a lot of things when it comes to football. But really, I mean, you knew it when you saw his ugly mug on the screen, okay? When you saw that stupid-ass, four-eyed look on his face, man, you know, man, this is going to suck. Look at him. Boy, I'll tell you, and NBC, you should have known this. I'm not a regular TV viewer, but I do believe that my reaction in this one instance was like every other man's in America, every other football fan's in America. When I turned on the playoffs and I saw Olbermann during the halftime, I didn't see him in the pregame, I saw him in the halftime, I said to myself, oh, you bastards, you have ruined halftime. I can't watch this. I can't watch this guy. Well, finally, after, you know, sticking their fingers in the light socket one too many times, after putting their hands, their bare hands, on the red-hot kettle barbecue, after putting their hands into the fire, NBC finally figured it out. Cable news commentator Keith Olbermann has been yanked off NBC Sunday Night Football. I was going to continue.
Oh, man, you got to watch that, man.
I said, I'm reading it, aren't I? Yanked off of NBC Sunday Night Football this year, according to reports.
What if they're lies?
If they're lies, I'm still going to report it as if it's true. Olbermann's MSNBC bosses are said to be behind the move to remove him from his high-profile spot on the pregame show. Football Night in America was the name of the show, and they were complaining that it was distracting him from his job on the cable news network. Basically, what that meant, Keith, if they're telling the truth, is that your show, while it already sucks, was getting even worse with you being on that football show. That's what they're saying. Your show sucked. We could have told him that. Olbermann missed several Friday night editions of his MSNBC show Countdown because of his commitment to the football show, and NBC news execs were unhappy. These are the same guys that gave him the green light to work on this show. Are you guys stupid? Yes, thank you. NBC officials assured reporters that Olbermann's florid left-of-center politics and tendency to rant against Republicans is not the reason he's being yanked. That's a lie. That's a lie. It was simply that his new cable bosses did not want the conflict any longer between his cable job and the Sunday night game. Let me tell you what happens, guys, because I've been in these conversations. And it goes like this. Okay, we're getting rid of blah, 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 blah. How do you want to spin this? How do you want to... Well, let's just say that's how it goes. It's as simple as that. It happens all the time. It happens in radio. It happens in TV. And it happened here. Got to get him off that show. Yeah, how do you want to spin it? Well, let's say that, you know, it's taken away from his commitment. That's a good one. Okay. Web detractors have taken to online message boards claiming his politics did get him yanked from the pre-show. Phil Hendry disguising himself... Olbermann, 51, has been appearing in one capacity or another on the Sunday night game since 2007, trying to fit in, trying to find a place where he wouldn't be such an irritant, not only to the viewers, but to his co-hosts. And it didn't happen. He's been the host of Countdown since 2003, in case any of you forgot. Oberman couldn't resist a cheap shot at Sarah Palin during last year's Sunday night football coverage, wrote a blogger on humanevents.com, a conservative website. When Trent Edwards was carted off the field in a game against Arizona due to a concussion, Oberman reported the quarterback was okay otherwise, but he said, "I can see Russia from here." God, dude, you know, how is it that Dennis Miller is no longer...
Yeah, see that compared to Dennis Miller, right?
Yeah. What do you mean compared to Dennis Miller? I mean, Dennis Miller was funny, man. I don't need to compare him to Keith Oberfreak to figure out that he's funny. Anyway, NBC officials yesterday did not respond to several emails asked for comment. The Sunday night game is NBC's highest-rated program, and losing his weekly spot will mark the end of the promotion his cable show has been getting over the past 3 years. That the other thing is, they do research, you know.
They probably did a focus group.
Exactly. They do focus groups, and they will show people. This is how they do focus groups. And there's two kinds of recall. There's aided and unaided recall. Aided recall is, what do you think of Keith Oberman? Unaided recall is, what do you think of the pregame show? And aided recall is, it helps the individual. Unaided recall can really help or really hurt. With unaided recall, you ask this question. What do you guys think of the pre-show? And if they say the following thing, I like it, except that one ass Oberman, that's bad. Because that is not aided. That came to that person's mind without any prompting. And I got money that says that's what happened. What do you think of that pregame? Yeah, it's great, except Oberman, man, I'm going to go out and commit homicide. I'm going to go to an old folks' home, and I'm going to kill that guy with the beard that does that childfund.org thing on late-night TV. Who is that guy? And people will say, huh? Coming up, a Georgia-area pastor is upset with the local high school's mascot. What is it? Beelzebub. Yeah. 877-876-PHIL. Another week, another 50 cents. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
Whoa! You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Oh, talk about that.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Bud Dickman just actually said to me with a straight face, he's so ready for the new season of The Colony.
That show, you don't know anything about how life, that's the way it's going to be.
That show is the worst.
Yeah, I got to agree, man. I don't like that show at all. You know what, the reason I don't like that show is because, first of all, it's too stupid, like contrived, like they're going to be diseased and everything.
That, you know what, they're trying to set up a premise that you can't set up.
What are you talking about, man? It's the end of the world.
You can't set up the end of the world, man. You can't do it. Okay, here comes some people. They may have disease. You know, you can't do it. You can't do that. You can do Survivor. You can do a lot of things. End of the world, no. And you want to know something? This is the second season. The first season stunk. This one's going to stink it out even more. Why do you think it's... Well, I shouldn't say, why is it on Discovery? I happen to like Discovery.
Yeah, you shouldn't say that, man. You watch them all the time.
I like Investigation Discovery. I don't like the regular Discovery.
What's the difference?
Investigation Discovery's got all those murder stories and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And the other Discovery, I don't know what the other Discovery has. And I like the Military Channel, and that's about it. All right, Warner Robins, Georgia pastor Donald Crosby arrested after an anti-demon mascot protest at high school. Please understand as I read this story to you folks, I want you to hear this story from a different perspective. I want you to hear this from the very legitimate... I do believe this, the very legitimate need of a Christian pastor, a Pentecostal or fundamentalist, if you will, pastor, who needs to get a flock. He needs to advertise himself. He needs to let people know who he is. He needs to let people know where his church is. He needs to let people know he's in business, and he wants people to come, not because he's a money grubber, but because he needs to have people. He needs to get the, pardon my French, he needs to get the asses in the seats. Because churches are just like they're like ball clubs in a lot of ways. You know, if you don't get the fans out, man, they're going to move the team. So if you think of your local church as like a baseball or football franchise, you know, well, I can't, you know, our attendance last year, I'm going to move down the road, man, go to another church. So this guy, his name is Donald Crosby, and how is he going to get people for his church? he's going to stir up a problem with the local high school, Warner Robins High School. That's the name of the town, Warner Robins. They got some towns in the south. They got towns. They got a place in Florida called Dr. Phillips.
Yeah, they got a Dr. Phillips, California.
No, we got a Phillips Ranch, don't we?
Yeah, Phillips Ranch.
See, I don't know. For some reason, it makes more sense if you put ranch at the end of it. But if you just say Dr. Phillips, Florida, Dr. Phillips what?
That's his town.
He founded the town?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, usually when you found a town, they call it Phillips, Florida, okay?
Yeah, well, not really. Not really. What about George Washington?
What about George Washington, man?
They don't call it George Washington. They call it Washington.
All right, well, okay, not that one, but, all right, San Francisco.
What about St. Francis?
Yeah.
That ain't his first name. He was a saint.
Yeah, but still, see, you're saying that...
Oh, forget that I even brought it up, bud. Never mind. Warner Robins, Georgia pastor Donald Crosby. A pastor was arrested on Monday. Thank you. Now then, no, I'm kidding. A pastor was arrested on Monday for protesting Warner Robins High School's demon nickname and mascot, and he says he was just standing up for Jesus, and he'd do it again. Pastor Donald Crosby, not to be confused with Bing, said the school's demon logo just encourages children to evil. With a straight face, he said, quote, I don't scare easily. Lock me up as many times as you have to lock me up. Even kill me if you have to. I'm standing up for Jesus. End quote. He criticized other Christians who, he says, are singing in church while their children are being taught to praise demons. Demons aren't lazy. Christians are, he said. Well, I'll give you that, Pastor. That's probably true. All right, here is Pastor Donald Crosby telling WMAZ-TV in Warner Robins, Georgia, why he's upset with Warner Robins High School's mascot. I'll bet you he was excited to be on WMAZ.
We have been protesting against their demon. They have a mascot that is a demon.
Uh-huh.
As a pastor, yeah. I was concerned about that.
Of course.
That children would gather hundreds in a building at one time shouting, go demons.
Yes.
Children who may not ever say Jesus, and that's fine, but if they're not going to be able, they're not going to be allowed to pray in school, I don't think they should be forced to become a demon by zoning.
Yeah.
And so we've been fighting that.
And what do you think?
Crotch grab.
All right. Now, here is Pastor Crosby. He was arrested for not having a permit to protest near the school. He explains why he didn't think he needed one. Do you need a permit to protest the demon? I don't think so. I agree with him.
So we didn't know that we needed a permit, but so that might be on our part, whether or not we knew we needed a permit. But I don't think I needed a permit to agree with God. When Jesus Christ says something is right, something is right. And now we have to go through all these systems only because we're not demons. They don't need a permit to shout, go demons.
Now, what did the devil say?
You blew it!
Exactly. Here is Pastor Crosby.
What are you doing?
Here's Pastor Crosby's take on Christians who didn't join him in the protest and claim he's willing to die for the cause.
When demons are riled up, they do whatever they got to do.
Right on.
Evil is busy, and they work hard, and they're not lazy. Evil's not lazy. Christians are. Christians stand in a church hidden, singing on choirs, while they got our children praising demons and singing to demons and all that stuff. I'm not going to stay stuck in a church anymore, scared. As a matter of fact, they didn't stop nothing, because I'm still going to open my mouth. I don't scare easily. They didn't stop nothing. Lock me up as many times as you need to lock me up. Even kill me if you have to. I'm standing for Jesus Christ, because if I live for him and I die for him, then I once again live with him.
Phil Hendry. You boy!